on Thursday.
It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, and I we'll see what happens here. We'll welcome in, I do believe, Cynthia. Cynthia, you in there?
I am, and so is Ann.
Ann.
Yeah.
There she is. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
All right.
Invisible Ann.
And let us bring in Janet Manco.
Yes, also
Hi,
invisible,
Janet.
I guess. Hi.
All right.
Her phone froze.
Janet's there, right, Janet?
Everybody warm and cozy, yeah.
Not Anne. Anne's got frostbite in her fingers.
Oh, my gosh. Taking photos? How'd you do that?
No, just driving to the radio station.
Oh, okay.
Well, I left my Jeep home today because it takes about 30 minutes to warm up on a regular day. On a day like today, it never warms up.
Right.
So the Jeep sat today.
Yeah.
It'll warm up on Sunday.
When I left my house, it was 9 below.
Yeah.
How can you tell the difference between 9 below, 8 below, and 7 below?
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Well, anyway, it's warming up now because now it's 3 below. So, anyways. Well, let us go to the Lakeville Journal. And something that we found out on Monday of this week, that Peter Cordeau has left the Sharon Hospital, and there is a new, interim director, right?
Right, Denise George, who is an administrator already with the HealthQuest company. So Peter Peter's been great at Sharon Hospital and started out as the chief nursing officer under Kim Lumia. Who is also a nurse, and then when Kim left, Peter was promoted, and we always had a wonderful relationship with him. Just a really great guy. His heart's really in the right place. Just
easygoing,
a really decent
also.
Person.
Easygoing, non-excitable.
Yeah. Very calm, as befits a nurse, but also just a very honest guy you could really have a conversation with. So we're very sorry to see him leave, but I would say it's been a rough transition with HealthQuest. You know, nobody actually knows what's going on over there, but so he's going to work at Norwalk Hospital, which is part of the Western Connecticut Health Network, which interestingly is looking to join forces with HealthQuest, so he'll be back within that corporate loop eventually. So I guess all these hospitals, you're either going to be part of HealthQuest or Hartford HealthCare or Yale New Haven, one of these big groups now.
All right. So
we're sorry to see him go.
Yeah, very sorry, because he was a good guy, quiet
very guy.
Good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It worked. So now here at the Bargain Bar, we got to figure out a lease again with somebody else. Oh, well.
All right.
And there's going to be a meet and greet with Denise George, the interim head, on Monday at 11:30.
And the public, of course, is invited. And there's even refreshments, because refreshments bring people out.
That's right. Even journalists, especially journalists.
It's the old law in doing something. Have free food.
Okay. Free food.
That's amazing.
That's right.
All right. But they'll probably have healthy food.
No, actually, I beg to differ.
Okay.
Yeah, I've having had snacks there before.
We'll report on that if you like. Yeah.
All right. So now let us go to something that the radio station became involved in very quickly.
Cannabis.
Facebook blew up over a bill that was put in by Maria Horn, and I had Maria on the other day to kind of inform people, but wow, did this bill about Lime Rock Park just blow up.
Well, and just to be clear, it's not about Lime Rock Park. It's about racetracks and whether towns have the right to regulate the hours of auto racing. But, of course, it's about Lime Rock.
Yeah, and, of course, on Facebook, it's only about Lime Rock.
Right. And but, you know, good for her. And so Maria Horn is our new state rep and jumped right in with both feet and is doing very interesting, thoughtful, creative work, as we expected her to do in presenting this new bill, which is a sort of a novel way to approach the ongoing conversation about Lime Rock Park, because, of course, this would give the town. So there's a lot of conversation about who actually has the right to regulate the track, the state or the town or the Planning and Zoning Commission. So it's actually, there's a lawsuit on its way to the state Supreme Court and will probably be resolved there. And in a way, we'll have an interesting parallel path to this bill, but we should see some interesting things happening on this topic in the next 6 months.
Absolutely, and one of the first questions I said to her, seeing it's going to the Supreme Court, what about your bill? And she said, well, we had a certain date we had to get bills in by.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think this is what the public doesn't realize. So the bill's in, and people are saying, well, is that a placeholder? It's not a placeholder, the bill's in, but it had to be in by a certain date, and if the Supreme Court rules on it, and it's done, then it's done. But that's why the bill went in early. And also because Brian Oler was very, very active in the community, Facebook and everything like that. Well, Maria is just as active. It's just that she's new and people don't know where to go to find out her Facebook page and her regular page.
And I like to go on Instagram and follow her.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more conversation in chat, and I think that a lot of it came through Falls Village, which, interestingly, it's not through Lime Rock residents necessarily. It's
well, that was one of the things they pointed out. And Jenna, you can talk about this a little bit, because what I pointed out to Maria, this is strange. Yes, the folks in Salisbury have the right, you know, to do what they want to do with things. But Lime Rock is just not a property that affects Salisbury. Right. It affects all the towns around.
Right, and it's a regional, and more than that, not only affecting everybody who lives in the area, but also that business draws people from all over. So it's an important issue, and it was interesting to read through the Facebook stream and see how people were thinking about it now. Certainly there's been a lot of discussion of it over the past few years, and as I understand it now, the bill is on hold in the Transportation Committee pending the decision of the Supreme Court. But anyway, read Patrick's story, and we will keep up with this too, and it's an important issue.
And it's good. And if nothing else, it showed a nice instinct on her part to sort of say, this is important to the people in my district, and I'm going to just try and do some.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with it. All right. Right below that, they just don't give up. I'll give them credit. The activist James Cromwell, they're protesting Cricket Valley Energy, and God bless them.
So for, you know, the 10 years or whatever that the Cricket Valley, you know, a proposal was going through, as Marshall points out, there was really very little conversation about it. And they were, you know, they advertised in the Lakeville Journal. We had articles about them.
They had press releases. They had stuff, everything.
Yeah, it was pretty well. But however, it was a fairly dry conversation up until that point. The town of Dover was happy to have it there. It's going to be a huge tax boom for them. They're claiming to be the cleanest burning power plant in the world when they come in. Certainly, we need electricity around here, especially when Indian Point closes in. But I would have to say, this is getting to be a very entertaining and colorful process now. And so last week we had an article about four hippie farmers who chained themselves to a tractor in the middle of the road to block delivery of one of the final large pieces to the building site. And the power plant is almost completely built. And then last Saturday, the actor James Cromwell, who I know mostly from Babe the Pig, but who's been in a lot of movies, and I thought he was Australian, but he's American. He grew up in L.A. and he lives in Orange County in New York, and has been very active in protesting power plants, and so they're going to see if they can get the permit yanked for this one.
The chance. Now, listen, I sit here, and I'm a realist. If you go look at the construction site and the change in the power, just the change in the power grid alone.
Yeah.
That they've done.
That's already occurred.
The chance.
It's like, it is so. I'm not saying.
There's an old expression. The ship has sailed. It really has.
Well, and so what they keep saying is Andrew Cuomo had presented his new green energy bill, and they keep saying, well, it's counter to his green energy bill, but in fact, it's actually exactly in line with the green energy bill. And what people don't get is that Cuomo really wanted to shut down that Indian Point nuclear plant. He felt it was too close to New York. And so that was a 2,000 megawatt power plant. This is going to be 1,000 megawatts of power to replace that. It is very green. And also, what people don't understand is there's a federal requirement that there be baseload energy providers, and this is a baseload energy provider that no matter what the weather, if there's no solar, if there's no wind, if there's no water, this power plant will continue to provide energy so that we can be on the internet and go on the radio, drive our electric cars. And so this power plant has to be there. If, however, as people keep saying, like, we're getting more and more, you know, good renewable sources, then that's what's going to shut down this plant, because they will always go with the renewable, less expensive energy first.
In due course. And what I don't understand is why that's so hard for people to understand.
Because they don't want to.
I think it's just not coming out properly.
I know, but I give them credit for protesting. I mean, I still protest and have all my anti-Trump stuff on. So, but I think that the goals, I realize that Donald Trump is president, so there's nothing I can do about it. But I think sooner or less, the people that think they can shut it down have to understand it's going to be economic forces that either make it succeed or shut down.
Right. And as Janet and I think both and all feel very strongly about is that fake news is also in how you receive it, and that there's a lot of information out there, and that people have to choose not only to read it and absorb it, but that they also have to choose to repeat it. So that even with Trump, that there may be many things you hate, but that you have to sort of look at clearly what he's doing. And with this power plant, it's the same. You have to look at the actual facts.
And I want to say quickly that at the same time as they are protesting, and they have the right to do that, they should also be promoting renewable energy and finding ways to do that in their community.
Agree.
All right. We will move on to a growth opportunity for young cannabis employees. Yeah.
When Patrick Sullivan read this article by Alexander Wilburn, he went up to him and said, Alexander, this article is splendid. It's a masterpiece. So even if you're not interested in cannabis in Great Barrington, you should read it, because Alex just did the funniest story. He and Ann Day went up to the pot shop up in Great Barrington on a somewhat warmer day. The hour and a half long line was not sufficiently daunting to keep them out of the shop. I believe that they did not shop for any product. Alex checked on Twitter last week. I believe the wait had gone up to 3 hours. I hope that it's shorter in this weather. But he wrote a very funny story about what really struck him as a young person is how many staffers there were there and how well-trained and eager to please and professional all the young people
and
were.
And extremely well-educated on what they were selling.
Which is not always the case.
No. All right. And then
speaking of marijuana,
bill has finally been introduced in Hartford. And I think, because the Democrats control the House, I think that this will rapidly come to be.
It's going to be interesting to see. Like, it's very hard to predict with these things. But it seems to have been a great, hit in Massachusetts. So we'll see what it does in Connecticut. And, the big question that people always ask is, well, if I buy it in Massachusetts, I can just bring it across the line to Connecticut. And that is actually incorrect. The state police, it seemed to have been actually pretty relaxed about it, even though Troop B was built on that border with Massachusetts specifically to stop alcohol from being run across state lines during the years of prohibition. But if you bring I hadn't realized this, when you read in the police blotter and it says 0.5 ounce of marijuana, that's a lot of marijuana.
In fact,
it's quite a large bag. So if they see you crossing the line with that product, it is illegal to bring it into Canada.
And you will get a ticket. Now, over a certain amount, you'll be considered a dealer and you'll be thrown in jail. So
will it be confiscated?
They'll just get a ticket. But over a certain amount, it'll be confiscated and you'll be sitting in the clink.
Good question, Joe. Alexander has a lot of information in his story besides it being funny.
All right, we've got, let's go back to protesters. Shaw Isaac said protesting war is a way to keep government in line.
The Winsett Community Bookstore often has very interesting talks, and they had one by David Blitz, and he was talking not just about the history of the anti-war movement, and I think that we feel it peaked during the Vietnam War, and he gave sort of a history of anti-war protests going all the way back, and there have been different ways that people have chosen to protest over the years, but an interesting little summary.
And the state has released Winsett from fiscal oversight.
Winsett was such a mess, and really, I have to say, it was depressing to watch for a while what was going on in that town. It just seemed so mismanaged. And the state stepped in, which is kind of encouraging to know that the state will do that. And there was, a huge embezzlement fraud from Henry Centrella in that town, 2010, 2011. I don't think they even presented an audit to the state. So the state came in and said, this is not going to fly. And they've been running the town sufficiently well that the town has released them from fiscal oversight. And the same thing, I believe, happened with the school districts. The Hinsdale School had been under state receivership, I believe it was called, and has been
released. The whole school district, yeah.
Yeah. So good for Winsted, bravo.
Nature's Notebook, Tim Abbott.
So in this weird weather that we have, and I will say that I keep telling people, when I was a teenager in Chicago, we had a polar vortex like this, and it was about 60. There was a moment when they were predicting 60 below wind chills. So weather is cyclical, and what sometimes happens is it changes the migration patterns of birds. So Tim Abbott is writing about watching at his feeder, and of course Tim is educated enough to know unusual birds when he sees them, or birds that are not necessarily even unusual but that are rare. And so he's predicting this is going to be a good winter for rare visits.
All right, we will finally flip the page. Lots of news.
No, it's a very newsy paper for January. And I promise we'll go through the rest faster so Anne has time to talk.
That's all right. We've got the so far so good on a Housatonic in Kent.
Which seems like a dumb headline until you think about last year, and we had these massive ice jams. I mean, really, when you went out and you saw the ice, it was so impressive. It was quite beautiful. But, I feel like it was 3 feet thick chunks of ice. There were even some actually near Janet's house in Lime Rock that on like smaller creeks you can see them. They look like stacks of toffee candy. And this year there's been some moments when the river seemed to be freezing, and I got on the phone with Bruce Adams, and he talked about how there are these two bends in the river that are very shallow, and what happens is the water doesn't move, so it doesn't break up the ice, and the ice jams, and it starts to crackle and build up into this, you know, this candy box look. So far, nothing has happened, but we'll just see what happens this week with the polar vortex coming in.
All
and,
right.
Drone photos from kids at the Marblewood School. Very cool.
Another article by Shaw. The mural is being assembled piece by piece in Winstead.
Ellen Griesdick, who's from Sharon, and Amy Wynn, who's from Falls Village, are, of course, Ellen is the founder of the American Mural Project and has traveled all over America doing paintings of American workmen, and is doing a giant mural in this converted factory space. This project's been going on for, you know, 17 years, and I think will continue to go on forever. But a very interesting project, and the artwork is beautiful, and they finally installed the first piece in their factory space.
I want to move inside a little bit to Cornwall, because the selectmen have declined to endorse that land trust application, and that's a
very
big story.
Unusual, very interesting story. This has been going on for a few weeks now. And so the land trust, Cornwall Land Trust, and of course Cornwall Land Trust, like all these land trusts, does beautiful, magnificent work. And Cornwall, as you know, as we all drive through it, we benefit from the beauty of it. But there was a parcel that was 72 acres, and the property owners were asking for $465,000 for that, which is not the most expensive amount anybody's ever asked for a large parcel. But one of the selectmen is a realtor, and of course, Gordon Ridgway, the first selectman, and all of the, you know, selectmen in our area are all concerned about affordable housing. And so they said, you know, we feel that the 72 acres and where it is and what can be used for it, we feel that it's not right to be conserving that land. We feel that there should be more affordable housing being built. And also we feel that 465 is a lot to be asking for that property, that it's based on whether you could build on that entire property, but there's going to be nothing built on it. So we have seen in the past conservation projects like the one where Whippoorwill Farm is in Salisbury on Salmon Kill Road, where a large farm parcel was conserved, but that they set aside a certain number of acres for an affordable farm, so that there could always be like a local farmer who could afford to live there. And we've all benefited from having Whippoorwill Farm. So I suspect that some kind of project like that will come up where they say you can build on these, you know, three parcels, but the rest of it remains conserved.
All right, I want to go to the story about the GOB, because I was watching on TV, and a couple of congressmen and senators were given a map, and they were asked to point out Venezuela. And
oh,
you
no.
know what? They didn't get the right, you know, some of them did not get the right
I'm
country.
I'm not sure I could. I could, like, if it was labeled, I could find it.
They all went to Chile instead of Venezuela.
That's interesting. Okay, I think even I could figure out where Chile is. But, so GOB coming up, and we've had some, you know, really impressive contestants in it, including Ann Day's son, who went to the state level and did a beautiful job. And so we're very proud of our GOB kids. And I believe that a student from Sharon is going on to the state level. We're very proud of our kids for the good work they do.
All right, very quickly on the sports page, the show is a go for Swassa, and they've got Mountaineer a week of review plus more.
The girls basketball team remains undefeated, so we're expecting to have a very exciting end of season wrap up on that soon. And in case you're wondering about, and Janet will talk at great length about our Jump Fest special issue, but Ken Barker, the head of Swassa, came in and said, yeah, we've been making snow since Thanksgiving, and it's going to be great, so come on out. And the weather should be better by February 8th, 9th, and 10th.
All right, let's go to the opinion page. Janet, the editorial, the importance of the news, past and present.
Right. I don't know if everybody will be interested in reading this, but let's think about it. And now's the time that this issue came up, because I don't know how many of us have heard of the museum in Washington, D.C., but it's been around for 10 years and is in the process right now of selling. It sold its building, actually, to Johns Hopkins University, of course. So it seems a little easier for universities to gather money to buy large buildings like that than it is for journalism enterprises, but that's the way things are, and let's think about where we're getting our news, and this is what we talk about this week.
All right, and a couple of letters regarding North Canaan.
Right, we have two letters on the asphalt plant in East Canaan, so by all means give those a read, and It's important. We also, and you know, these are important issues to these towns. We also have a letter from Kent on new sidewalks being sorely needed in Kent. So take a look at their sidewalks next time you're there, too.
And, of course, Peter Steiner and lots of different articles.
Yes, we have columns from Dick Ellis, Carol Asher on the citizenship question that's going, our president is looking to have on the 2020 census, and Bill Schmick on the pay gap for women.
And I want to go back to turning back to pages 100 years ago today. Some people are filling their ice houses from Gillette Pond. The ice is 11 inches thick.
Yeah. I mean, really.
But we just got a reminder from Aquarian. Don't walk on lakes and reservoirs right now because they may look frozen, but they might not.
They're not. The water moving underneath. Okay.
Yeah. In between, we've had those.
All right. And the state grant gets the ball rolling for the gear upgrades.
That's right. They've got some money, and now it's official. And as Kevin O'Connell said, uh-oh, now we have to get to work. But it's going to be great. Those skilled nursing facility rooms really need an update. And gear is just a wonderful place, and it will make it even more wonderful.
I go there twice a week for my rehabilitation.
Me too.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
It's a great resource. And we go every day for lunch.
And it's funny. You're in there, and you see everybody you know comes in.
I know.
Everybody, and we're all the same age in our late 50s or 60s.
And trying very hard to act as young as possible.
It's so funny.
Yeah. We're outpatients.
All right. Let us move then to the Compass section. And ladies and gentlemen, she's warmed up and ready to go.
Okay. And I'm spinning into the new year. I did go to a spin class Monday. I think I'm the world's worst spinner.
I've spun with you.
But I do.
Are you a slow
spinner? I go. I don't do what everyone else does, but I go.
I met Ann at spin class.
Back then, I was a better spinner as Cynthia. Now. Anyway, Stephanie Coven, who writes very good and very personal stories about activities like hiking. And this week, she's writing about spinning and talking about how in her personal life, it's really helped. I don't know much more to say because it's such a personal story. I think everyone should read it. But I'd like to point out that you can spin at Studio Lakeville in Lakeville and also at Studio at 41 Gay Street in Sharon. And if there are other spin classes around, just let us know at compass@lakevillejournal.com and I'll try to mention them as well, but these are the two that I know about. Then we have a review by Alexander Wilburn of a film called Cold War, which I saw, and I think it's the best movie of the year, bar none. It's so beautifully shot. It's such a the acting is amazing. It's a story about kind of star-crossed lovers during the Cold War in Poland. And it's got subtitles, of course, because it's in Polish. And we never think of, when we think of foreign films, we think that we're going to have to see them in French or Italian. And we forget that Poland has such an active film world. Anyway, it's a great film. Alexander really liked it. But what's amazing about it is the way it's photographed. It looks like old-fashioned black and white without the cheesy studio Hollywood lighting of old-fashioned black and white. It gives you a feeling of another era without that phony, heavily electric lit look. So it's definitely worth seeing. It was at the movie house. I don't know if it's still there, but see it. And there's also a story by Marsden about how to make good soup. And she gives a recipe, and I'm always, always looking for an easy to do stock recipe. So her soup starts with stock. And then there's different recipes for putting either ramen noodles with ground pork, or there's you can also put a vegetarian version of that. Anyway, the best part about it is the stock recipe, and then you can do whatever you want with that stock. And I'm afraid to say that because I only have two little pages here, Marshall, I'm finished.
Well, Janet can talk about the Jump Fest.
Too, yeah. Oh, and there's calendar, of course. There's a great show at the Academy Building of the Salisbury Winter Sports Association. It's a SWASA exhibit, and they'll have extended hours during the weekend of the jumps.
And they just got a bunch of new stuff from the Sherwood family, historic jump stuff. And Janet, do you want to talk about
speaking of the jump?
That's right, the insert, yeah. The
jump
insert.
Fest.
This
dun,
week
dun,
we have a fantastic 48-page ski jump program. The Jump Fest is going to be February 8th, 9th, and 10th in Salisbury. It's a fantastic event. Caroline Gilbert, a SWASA volunteer, puts together this program. She's the editor of the piece, really, and our composing department works so hard to pull everything together, and all the volunteers who sell these ads and pull everything together for this program. It's one small part of what makes the ski jumps happen, but it really describes what SWASA is all about, the history of it. Dedicated to George Kiefer this year. Don't miss reading about him, the icon, the late George Kiefer of our area. And so much good information in it. So much fun to read. So really, read through it. And don't miss Tri-Corner Real Estate this week, too.
And that insert has become a tradition as much as the ski jumps itself, to be honest with you. People really look forward to it.
Great photos.
Well, that's great. Yeah, yeah. This is one organization that's very aware of its history and the importance of it. This is the 93rd annual ski jumps. They've grown and grown. That ski jump, for anybody who hasn't been up there, go up and take a look. You won't believe how high it is, okay? It's just fantastic.
So. All right. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Stay warm.
Yeah.
Famous last words.
Yeah.
And you can find the Lakeville Journal at tricornernews.com, and you can also find them also on Facebook as well. And that is right here, of course, live on a Thursday morning.